Hi, my name is Claire and I'm the mother of three teenagers with FASD.
I'm Jessica, a PhD researcher specialising in educational interventions for children with FASD.
And together we are the hosts of Spotlight on FASD, the UK's first podcast dedicated to shining a spotlight on fetal alcohol spectrum disorders.
FASD is a condition caused by prenatal alcohol exposure that affects hundreds of thousands of children across the UK.
And we're here to bring these conversations out of the shadows and make sure that no one living with FASD feels alone.
Hi everyone, and welcome back to the next episode of Spotlight on FASD. And another episode in our mini series with Jared Brown. So we're talking very loosely all things criminal justice. And within that, under that umbrella, we've got a few different mini topics that we just want to touch on there. They're not mini topics at all. They're absolutely enormous topics. But we are bringing like a tiny little snapshot just to acknowledge them really, that so that we can, just put the conversation out there, and if people get in touch, if people have a lot of questions and things, we can revisit and delve much, much deeper one day. So today we are talking about FASD and sexualized behaviors. So welcome again, Jared. Thank you for joining us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me back.
Thank you. Would you like to just give an overview of sexualized behaviors, what that means in terms of FASD?
Yeah, another important and complex topic that it does come up more often than we realize. And sexuality obviously is a normal part of everyday life. For some individuals, they may engage in inappropriate sexual behavior. And what does that really mean when someone engages in inappropriate sexual behavior? It could mean that they are engaging in behavior that brings them into contact with the criminal justice system. It could be behavior that really leads to a lot of confusion, distress within that interpersonal kind of construct or within that family system. Now, most people on the FASD spectrum we're not going to be dealing with this, but there's a good sizable minority of individuals that absolutely do engage in some form of inappropriate sexual behavior at some point in their life. Now, is it intentional in a lot of cases? Difficult to know, because I think when we think of this, we absolutely need to look again at that person's emotional and developmental age, where maybe the person has a tendency to associate with people younger than them, but their brain functions as if they are younger. So in their mind, they may not think they're doing anything wrong talking to someone a lot younger than them. And this is where it gets tricky with social media. We do a lot of work in the area of like social media misuse. And I do see this anecdotally with this population in some cases, where if they are left to their own devices online and not having like fences and barriers put in place or oversights, in some cases, social media could be a catalyst for engaging in inappropriate sexual behavior, sharing images, talking to people younger than them, where maybe it didn't start out as something problematic, but it grew with time. So we really need to be aware of the social media component to this. There are a lot of reasons why, when we look at this literature, why this happens. And some of the things, again, I think a big part has to do with developmental immaturity. We really need to take into account social, emotional, and cognitive age over their chronological age. Maybe it's that inability to learn from past mistakes, or they consistently just don't connect the dots. That's abstract reasoning. If we have time, I'd love to give your audience just a brief overview about abstract reasoning and how that might really be a factor to consider when we talk about this topic. What about not understanding just social boundaries in general? Not understanding what healthy friendships mean, intimacy. What does it mean when someone doesn't want to talk to you? What does it mean when you are talking to a stranger versus someone you know? How do you modify how to talk to a child versus an adult? So really teaching this population, obviously, social boundaries, healthy friendships, healthy intimacy. Impulsivity is another big consideration to take into account. Can they put on the brakes and pause and reflect and think through maybe the thought they're having that comes to their mind? Do they act on that thought immediately? Can they understand or grasp the concepts around sexuality in general? Have they ever had just appropriate like education around this topic? Very important. So those are just a few of the things. I can go a lot deeper into other variables to consider if that would be helpful.
I think one of the questions that I had written down was, you know, is there a neurological explanation? But actually, I think I already know the answer to that, really, because again, in a previous episode when we talked about fire setting, it is all to do with their cognitive age, not the chronological age. So, and especially when you're talking about online presence, it is, you know, I can totally see how a 17 or an 18 year old boy could be at the same kind of enjoyment level on a game as an 11 year old girl, and you know, they could genuinely enjoy playing together, be on the same level, but just instantly without anything happening that's inappropriate, society is like, that is totally unacceptable, there's grooming going on, what's going on there? And it's and actually, you know, in a situation where the older child has FASD, they are the more vulnerable child in that situation. So it's so complex, and it's such a hard thing to balance, because for a lot of our kids, the online world is a safe world for them to be in. It's a way they can access friends around their anxiety, around their disability, but it does leave them hugely vulnerable as well. So it's something that, you know, and I said this to you both before, when I knew that this is what we were talking about, it made me feel really uncomfortable, and I didn't want to talk about it, which is exactly why we must talk about it. Because this is, I think, a huge area where our children are very, very vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just the way the law is means that, you know, they could be behaving in a way that is appropriate to how old they mentally are, but it's illegal because of their chronological age.
Yeah. So, and especially with this, you've got that developmental age, yeah, and the flood of hormones that drives your average teenager whose body is 14, 15, 16, 17. You know, everybody listening to this, you know, we've all known teenagers, we've all been teenagers. You know, that's huge. But it's driving a body that doesn't have the mental capacity, the ability to match the body in the driving seat to direct that energy, to direct that the exploration and everything else that's going on there through those teenage years. And as you say, that can lead to huge vulnerabilities or just dangerous scenarios, really.
Like all these topics we've been talking about, I think it's imperative, again, to look through that executive functioning lens, that kind of the CEO of the brain, the boss, and that relates to judgment and decision-making and problem-solving and reasoning and logic. I mean, those all come into play with any type of criminal justice-based issue we talk about. But what happens if we talk about the topic of consent and intent and the word no? I think those are very important concepts to absolutely teach someone with FASD, because those could be abstract in a way. Like, what does it mean to engage in private behavior versus public behavior? How do you act around a stranger versus a friend who you know? I mean, all of these things, it just doesn't apply to inappropriate sexual behavior. If we can teach people with FASD all of these concepts, I think that's going to help in a lot of different aspects of their life. Do they lack the awareness of a risky situation? Do they understand that maybe they're starting to engage in a really dangerous situation? What about gullibility? or confabulation or suggestibility. Those are other topics we have to absolutely consider when working with this population. And now let's say someone with FASD is actually charged and convicted with a sexually inappropriate offense, and now they're court ordered to be in treatment. It is imperative, that's a whole other can of worms to talk about, is treatment of people with FASD who have these histories. Because if they're thrown into a treatment as usual program, mm-hmm. and no one in there understands FASD, and they're in a group with a number of other individuals who've had inappropriate sexual behavior offenses, but they don't have FASD, that person with FASD could walk out of that treatment worse off than mm-hmm. what they were beforehand in some cases. I mean, we can talk about that if that's helpful, but it's imperative too. Mm-hmm. to prevent this as much as possible. But if they do become involved in the criminal justice system, ensuring that the legal system and the treatment settings understand this topic and why modifications to treatment and intervention and assessment absolutely need to be taken into account.
Yeah. Even just then, when you mentioned, public settings and private settings and the behaviors appropriate to those, that flagged up straight away, for me, and just, took me back to, situations where I was working with children and young people with FASD, and, how I instantly felt like if I tried to explain, this is what's appropriate in public and this is what's appropriate in private, and you can't cross those boundaries, I feel like I would very quickly be met with the question, but there was nobody around, so what's the problem? It was private.
Absolutely. And online behavior versus, and fantasy versus reality. I mean, these are big concepts that get really confusing for someone with FASD, because if they see something online and they're in a chat room mm-hmm. or watch a video, they may think this is how it really is in real life and try to act that out. And not good things can obviously happen in those situations.
Yeah. And with was it abstract reasoning you said that you'd hope to touch on, because that,
I think if we were to look through an abstract reasoning lens when working with people with FASD, regardless of what's going on, it would help us better understand why things happen in some cases. So cause and effect. Why do I do this and this results? So again, for this population, cause and effect deficits, forward thinking, even thinking for the future. I work with a lot of clients with FASD who really just think in the here and now. It's a foreign concept for some. Where do you see yourself at in 6 months from now, a year from now? That is just so far away. So it's always living in the moment. Now, living in the moment for some things like mindfulness, not a bad thing, but always living in the moment, it's not a good thing. You can't get traction. It's hard to complete a goal and achieve your goal plans in life. If someone is dealing with abstract reasoning deficits, they're going to have a difficult time processing complex information and concepts. So if they're, again, thrusted into a treatment program and everyone in the group maybe is 30 years old chronologically, and that person's chronologically 32, but they have a brain of a 10-year-old, mm-hmm. it's going to go over their head. The ability to shift cognitive strategies in response to feedback is abstract reasoning. People with FASD have a very difficult time with that. So thinking rationally, judgment, problem solving, reasoning, all of those things. In some cases, people with abstract reasoning deficits can also have a real difficult time just interpreting verbal information. So we need to not just verbalize it and say it, but fact check, verify. Maybe it is using visual aids, visual reminders, visual calendars, video modeling, social stories. People with abstract reasoning deficits oftentimes have trouble with time, money, and distance. Money management, huge issue for a lot of people with FASD. If someone's dealing with time management issues, they may have a hard time holding a job if they're on probation. They may show up to their probation appointment late consistently. The concept of time is really interesting. So if it's a parent saying, you have 15 more minutes before you need to get off the screen, 15 minutes to someone with FASD, could feel like a minute, could feel like 2 hours. There's no concept in some cases. So it's important to define the beginning, middle, and end of time and make it visual, those kind of things. And this really goes to the heart of understanding consequences. And abstract reasoning also relates to self-esteem and social skills and task completion. And one red flag indicator, if you're working with someone with true abstract reasoning deficits, is if they consistently try and try and try to complete something, but they just kind of fail. It doesn't ever seem to get traction. That's a huge topic. I really think understanding that can really help us modify our approaches. It's not the only thing to be aware of, but it's a big thing, in my opinion.
So I think that I've just been reflecting while you've been talking there and thinking about the whole sexualized behavior with FASD. And I think that, again, we always try and focus, we want to be very real, but focus on as many positive aspects as we can. And I think as the mother of three teenagers with FASD, what I will say about the no filter aspect of it and this whole openness is that I think I'm probably luckier than a lot of average parents, where there is nothing that isn't discussed. There is nothing that can't be discussed. So I'm able to have really, really open conversations with them where there is zero embarrassment at all. It's just, absolute fact, matter of fact. So I think that's a huge, I think probably, if we're being honest, in a situation where you're a parent and certainly a teen with FASD, it's probably you finding it more difficult than them broaching these subjects and talking about them and trying to find a way to talk about what's appropriate and the boundaries and trying to find a way of giving them a little bit of understanding about consequences. But it's, it's difficult for the parent of any teen to do that. It's not something that you relish, but it is vital to do that. So I think that would be my message. It is absolutely, it's more vital that we do that, because our children are so vulnerable and so gullible and so suggestible that we have to put even more effort into that side of things. And, I know that some people might think, well, are we not just raising the profile of that whole topic by wanting to talk about it with them? But that's definitely not the case. I don't believe anyway. I think that we need to normalize it. And so then once we normalize it, we're able to then attach some acceptable behaviors to that normal, if that makes sense.
And I'll take it a step further. I think if we're looking at this through an FASD lens, it is imperative, again, to utilize trauma-informed, attachment-based interventions. We absolutely need to understand executive function, suggestibility, gullibility, confabulation. And I would add theory of mind to that too. Understanding theory of mind deficits in this population is so important. Theory of mind relates to social perspective taking. There's elements of empathy that are wrapped up into theory of mind. And it's really, can that person understand the internal mental states of other people, thoughts, wants, needs, emotions, intentions, feelings? There's a breakdown in that in a lot of cases. And just emotional awareness too. Does that person understand emotions? Do they understand why they have certain emotions, certain feelings? And then do they understand their reactions to them? Those are very critical things to be aware of. And if someone with FASD is engaging in inappropriate sexual behavior, those are just a few of the variables I think absolutely it's important for clinicians, professionals, and caregivers to at least understand.
Yeah, definitely. I think, again, this is something that we could talk about for hours, but I think we've started the conversation, and I would like to think that we could be a source of support for anyone who's struggling with parenting or caregiving around this. I'm sure that it's something, certainly with regards to the criminal justice, I'm sure it's something that we will dig into and put like a magnifying glass onto a lot deeper. But this is the this alongside with our other episode about fire setting. These are things that we just really wanted to acknowledge, put it out there that you know, because we've always said that we want to talk about, we do focus on the positive, but we don't shy away from any of the tricky topics that come with FASD. So you know, thank you again for giving us your time, for talking about this. We absolutely know that we'll be back to pick your brains even more. But we're just very, very grateful that you give us this time to educate us, because I've written absolutely tons of notes. I'm always writing things down because it's, you know, I think that living it, I love being able to speak to professionals because I'm self-taught in all of my strategies, and it's just so reassuring for me as a mother to be able to get the professional side of things. Yeah, it makes me feel a lot more secure about my parenting, definitely. So personally from me, thank you for that.
You're welcome, and thank you guys so much, and honored to come on, and feel free to share my contact information with folks. I have lots of articles on all these topics if they're looking for some good reading materials as well.
Yeah, definitely. We'll link those in on all of our social media and on our YouTube channel, if anyone wants to get in touch and have a little read about those. So thank you very much. So we'll speak to you again soon.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Kez.
Okay.
Awesome.
Brilliant.
Well, any thoughts? Too much? Not enough?
No, I think it was just, I think there's such heavy topics.
Yeah.
That was probably just enough to talk about them and to broach them, because then neither of them are topics that people really want to talk about, but they want to hear about them because they want to know that it normalizes a lot of their situations.
Plenty on false confessions. I have plenty on vulnerability and victimization for another one. Suicide risk. I have an article we're working on right now to publish on FASD and suicide risk and self-injurious behaviors, and those would be three other topics if you guys are interested down the road.
Definitely. I was writing them down. Yes, we will. We'll definitely will be back in touch. And we'll send you the links.
Okay. Yeah,
so that you can share them as well across your.
Can I share them with students in my classes too?
Yeah.
Is that okay? Okay, yeah. Awesome.
They're just on YouTube, so.
Yeah, okay. Share with anyone. So we'll send them all over. So thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome. Good chatting with both of you. Have a good week.
You too. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.